Hello and good morning. Welcome to Fight Night Carrotcast. Today we have Dr. Sean Carter and Dr. Hill Rodriguez. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning. Good. How are you?
We're doing great.
Good morning.
Good morning. As you know, we are talking a very good topic today. We're talking sciatica, right? And how chiropractic works to relieve the pain. You guys are the experts, so I wanted to start with Dr. Carter. In regards to what causes this pain for sciatica on mostly arm and legs, right? Or what other parts could be maybe a focus here?
Yeah, so sciatica refers specifically to the leg. So, you know, from the low back to the leg. Sciatic pain can result from a pinched nerve, a herniated disc compressing a nerve. It can also occur when there's a peripheral neuropathy around the sciatic notch because the piriformis or the muscles around the piriformis can become very tight. And a peripheral neuropathy means that it's not coming from the spine, it's coming from something distal from the spine. So there are different causes for sciatica, and it means pain down into the buttock and down the back of the leg. It doesn't have to go all the way down, but in some cases it does, depending on the severity of the case. And so I have a model here, it's called a nerve function model. That's a really good model, educational tool for patients. And what I do is I press what is considered normal. Now, this is an old model, so it's a little dysfunctional. It's not perfect. You'll see some red in there. It should all be green. But what happens when there's a compression of a nerve root, which is this structure right here, and that comes off of the spinal cord, at every level, every vertebral level, and the nerves are numbered. What happens is if there's a compression of the nerve, you'll start to get aberrant impulses in the nerve root. And so you'll start to feel pain down the leg. And that would be a description and a cause for sciatica, one of the causes for sciatica, okay? Now, usually sciatic pain will start in the low back, sometimes not, and it'll go directly into the buttock, into the sciatic notch. And then from there, it'll go down the back of the hamstring, back of the thigh. It could skip over the knee, and you could have pain and cramping in the lower leg, and you can even have numbness and tingling in the foot and sometimes in the lower leg. So there's a variety of different symptoms that you can have. It presents different ways, and what we do as chiropractors is we try to reduce that pressure on the nerve and thereby bring back the normal function of the nerve so that pain goes away in the leg. So the first thing to go in these scenarios is, firstly, you can get sensation decrement, or you could tingling, numbness, paresthesias in the leg. That's the first thing. And if it's there, if the patient has it long enough, you can start to see changes in the deep tendon reflexes and muscle weakness. So if you catch it early, you can prevent those things from happening. If you don't catch it early, it's much more difficult to treat because once you start to lose, you know, deep tendon reflexes and muscle atrophy and weakness, that's a much more difficult thing to return to normal. It will take more time. It'll take more treatment. So the idea is to get treated right away and start to reverse those symptoms as soon as you can. You get the best outcome.
Dr. Rodriguez, what are like common causes that you see maybe in your patients?
So, I mean, a lot of the causes that we see in our office are either repetitive stress or sitting in the same position for long periods of time. Somebody who's spending a lot of time either sitting in the car, sitting in front of a computer, just that lack of motion can cause inflammation around the area and gives those symptoms. Very rarely do we see, it can be trauma, but rarely is it trauma with patients. It's usually something that they did, something that they're overdoing, or something that they're not doing. So very, you know, most people think, oh, you probably see a lot of people who lifted something heavy and hurt their back or hurt their sciatic nerve, or maybe they slipped and fell. And that's the minority of the patients that we treat. The vast majority are patients who are either doing the same job that they're doing over and over again, causing stress to those areas, to the hip, to the back, to the glutes, to the legs, or patients who are just simply either standing up for long periods of time, which can cause those symptoms, or the opposite, which is sitting for long periods of time, which can also cause those symptoms.
I was going to go ahead, Dr. Carter.
I just want to add to that. Yeah. Typically, like as Gil said, a lot of these conditions are, they're not due directly related to trauma, but you can have micro traumas over time. People get weaker from sitting all the time, and then they start to do some exercise or lift a box or move some furniture or do some gardening, and they'll come in, and it'll take a few days for this to kind of manifest itself before the symptoms really start to show. And then they get a full-blown case of sciatica. It could be a week later or a few days later. And they don't necessarily relate it to the incident. But the other thing is, you can have a herniated disc or a bulging disc or some kind of nerve compression, like a foraminal. You can have arthritis that can also cause foramen narrowing, or stenosis, as they call it, foraminal stenosis, that can cause compression of a nerve. And those, then when there's an inflammatory event, whatever that event might be, you're predisposed to sciatica. So a lot of people come back with the same symptoms year after year or several years later. Sometimes people get it every few months because they've got a compromised, nerve, and it just takes a single event. It could be bending over the wrong way, doing dishes, brushing their teeth where they're slightly flexed forward in an awkward position for a little while. And it's enough to create the inflammatory event that'll create congestion in the area of the nerve root, and that'll cause the sciatic event. So
for our listeners, so the sciatic nerve pain can radiate from the lower back all the way to your foot, right? I mean, it's covering pretty much that whole
area. Can go that far. Sometimes it's limited to just the buttock. Sometimes it goes down the back of the leg, the thigh. And in a full-blown case, it can go all the way to the toes and the bottom of the feet.
Wow. That's, how can you identify that? Like, if somebody comes in and, I mean, I know there's, a lot of nerves in that area, but how can you exactly identify that it's sciatic?
Well, there's a pain pattern. You want to?
Yeah, so, oftentimes we'll have a patient come in and say, I have really bad sciatic pain. And then they point to the front of their thigh. And we go, that's nerve root irritation that's going down the leg, but it's not exactly sciatica. So when we do have a patient that comes in with back pain radiating into the glutes going down the back of the hamstring, that's a pretty typical pattern of radiating pain for sciatica. And then we have to figure out, okay, what's causing it? Where is it coming from? Is it coming right out of the spine, right from the nerve roots that lead into the sciatic nerve? Is it coming from sacroiliac joint inflammation and irritation to those ligaments and tendons that can compress and irritate the sciatic nerve as it's running by? Is it coming from the surrounding muscles, the piriformis muscle, glute medius muscles, the external rotators of the hip that can be irritated and causing either compression or inflammation around the sciatic nerve, leading to some of those pains? Is it a herniated disc? Is it stenosis? So we have several tests that we run and several positions that we put a patient in to see, okay, what exactly is causing this? Where is it coming from? A lot of what we do is palpation. So we palpate the areas to see what's tender, what's irritated, what's inflamed. And based on the patient history, based on the exam findings, and based on our physical examination, we can say, okay, it appears that this is likely what we sometimes would say a piriformis entrapment. The piriformis muscle is so tight, it's compressing the sciatic nerve, and that's what's causing the symptoms. Or, this may be a herniated disc that's causing irritation to L4-L5, which is presenting like sciatic-like symptoms. So we can figure that out with our examination or our history. Is there anything you wanted to add to that, Doc?
No, it covers a lot of it. I mean, the piriformis is an important component there. And again, if it's a piriformis syndrome, it's really not a spinal event. It's more of a muscular event, because the sciatic nerve, depending on everyone's anatomy, is slightly different. But there's a percentage of the population that has the nerve that pierces right through the fibers of the piriformis muscle that goes across, and or neighbors above or below. And depending on their anatomy, if that piriformis is very tight, meaning that they have their external, piriformis is an external hip rotator. So if it's very tight, it's going to put pressure on that sciatic nerve. And the nerve is very, very sensitive to any kind of compression. And so that can provoke those symptoms. And so differentiating between a true sciatica and a piriformis syndrome can sometimes be quite difficult. And so, you can do imaging, you could do MRIs and what have you, but really the proof is in the pudding. So treatment you try treating for both, actually, to make sure that you're covering both sides. But you know, your diagnostic orthopedic testing is very important in trying to distinguish between the two different conditions.
Exactly. I mean, it's very common, obviously, for people to come in and probably just kind of diagnose themselves, right? They think right away it's sciatica just because they feel the, you know, the under, because I believe it's behind the hamstring, right? That's a very common also side effect. I heard palpating. Can you explain to our listeners palpating? What is the technique and how do you guys go about it? Yeah.
So, I mean, palpating is using your hands, using your sense of touch
Okay.
to see the tone, texture, temperature of the muscles, of the skin, of the joints, how they're moving. You know, we palpate the joints to see what kind of motion we have between the spinal segments, between the sacral pelvic segments, and the extremities, to make sure that we have normal range of motion, to make sure that you know, we're palpating and we're touching and we're feeling for inflammation, for temperature changes, for tenderness, for pain. We also like to touch and see how the muscles are responding, and how they're feeling. You know, are they tight? Are there achy? Are there trigger points in those areas? So essentially, palpation is using your sense of touch. From our perspective as chiropractors, we do it all the time because we're trying
Of
to
course.
assess motion. And using your sense of touch to see what the tissues in the area are doing and how they feel.
Yeah. Palpation is really our most important
Yeah.
way of diagnosing. It's the best tool that we have because we touch so many spines every day, and you know, we can assess joint play, as Gil said. So joint play is every joint has a certain amount of play in it, you know,
Certain amount of
and
movement,
a
yeah.
movement. And when you hit a joint and touch a joint that's not moving well, it's really obvious to us. And that's how we identify, you know, that's called motion palpation, or, you know, you're actually testing the joint to see if it's pushing back on you. If it has a hard end feel, then it's restricted, and that causes all kinds of nerve facilitation, where the local region just fires up and the muscles get tight and everything around it becomes inflamed. And so, you know, releasing that and getting that motion, restoring the motion back to the joint is essential for that whole area to calm down.
Exactly. That's well, palpating, it's a technique used to identify, right? If there's any damage to any nerve, and for you guys to know whether it's sciatica or another issue. But what are techniques used maybe to treat patients? What do you guys use for treating of the sciatica in the patient?
It's a good question. Why don't we show you? We have a great table here. It's called the
Let's do
flexion
it.
extraction table. I'm going to turn this a little bit, and I'll get on the table, and Gil will do some palpation and demonstrate what that looks like, and then
Awesome.
he'll treat me as if I have sciatica.
Yeah, I was in that table. I also thought he was sciatica.
So, flexion distraction table is a great tool, specifically for cases of sciatica or herniated disc or even stenosis, where the bottom half of the table bends so that we can create distraction and take pressure off the spine, off the legs. And what we can do is we can use the table to kind of flex the spine and open up those joint spaces and alleviate a lot of pressure either coming from the back or the hips. And what we typically do is we anchor the patients down. We ask them, of course, is it okay if we anchor you like this? First, we actually do a little test run. We'll flex the table with them without anchor to make sure that it doesn't cause any extra pain or discomfort. But what we'll typically do, we'll unlock the table. I'm increasing the tension here because Dr. Cotter is taller and heavier than most of our patients. Let me stand on this side. And oftentimes, if it is coming from the lower back, we'll create a little bit of tissue pull and use the table to kind of flex. And in doing so, taking pressure off that whole area there. So we're really opening up the joint spaces, taking pressure off the nerves, off the discs, off the joints to help alleviate and increase circulation through here. So by simply doing this, we're not just taking pressure off, but we're also improving the circulation because we're opening it up. and then returning back to normal, and doing that several times, and doing so that helps with diffusion and profusion of the joints and of the discs in the area. We can also go side to side depending on what the patient's feeling and how they're responding. How's that feel, Doc?
Fantastic.
And this feels
exactly what I need right now.
This was one of my favorite techniques to learn when I was in chiropractic school, because I would often volunteer to be on the table because it feels very nice.
Yeah. Yes. I myself felt very good when I was on the table, and he helped me a lot. I lost a lot of pressure from my lower back because the spine is opening right in that area.
Exactly. We're opening up the joints. We're taking pressure off the area.
For people that are fearful of getting cracked.
But... Exactly. So patients who don't want to get, adjusted, what we call diversified adjusting, which is that popping, clicking, snapping type of adjustments, we'll do something like this where it's very gentle on them.
Exactly.
We were talking about palpation, and in terms of palpation, one of the things that we look at, let's say the doc here presents with right-sided sciatic, we're going to the butt, down the back of the leg. We'll palpate the spine and see how the joints are moving. We'll palpate the muscles of the pelvis, piriformis, glute medius, glute max. We'll even palpate the hamstrings and the attachment sites of the hamstrings to make sure that it's not a hamstring issue. If they're having a lot of pain into the back of the leg, is it sciatica? Is it a hamstring issue? Is it something else? And these are just the ways that we kind of identify, okay, where is this coming from? Is it coming from the back? Is it coming from the pelvis? Is it coming from a distal location? Is it not sciatica at all? Is it a hamstring strain that's presenting like sciatica or nerve pain? So those are kind of the things you can get up there, that we can kind of assess and treat very effectively here in the office.
That was great. That was a great demonstration, of the techniques that can be used. And I also wanted to ask if these treatments, if these techniques can be used alongside medical treatment, because maybe a lot of patients are, whether do I just use the medical treatment or do I just do chiropractic care? Can they be used alongside?
Absolutely. Well, it depends on the type of medical care, but we often have a pain management physician that comes into our office, and he comes in once a week, and he'll evaluate patients for trigger points. He'll evaluate them for lumbar radiculopathies, or radiculopathies, which is another word for radiating pain from emanating from the spine or originating in the spine. And so if you have pain down the arm or down the leg, that's called a radiculopathy. And he, his name is Dr. Krosny. He's very good. So he uses lidocaine injections, tiny little needle, injects the trigger point that helps release the fibers of the trigger point, because the trigger point is locked in, and it causes local ischemia, which is it crimps the circulation locally. And so the metabolites of toxic metabolites are painful because there's no blood flowing through and flushing them out. Over time, they can be quite painful, and they can cause headache syndromes and different things. And if you have them in the suboccipital region or in SCM muscles. So he triggers these muscles, and that helps release the muscles. And we do it manually, what's called myofascial work. It takes longer. An injection is much quicker. And, they're both effective. But the point is that we do work with physicians, especially pain management physicians and anesthesiologists. They treat them with medicine, and we treat them mechanically, biomechanically. So if you can reduce the inflammation, it makes our job a lot easier, mm-hmm. right? We want their inflammation to be as little as possible. Then we could perform manipulation. When they're very inflamed, it's more difficult to perform manipulation. You can do some like very gentle stuff just to get joints moving a little bit, but you don't want to be forceful at all. The flexion distraction is a great technique, but again, it depends on what type of disc injury there is or what kind of joint issue there is. So that's a flexion distraction table, meaning that you can distract a table, long axis traction to open up the spine, but then how you move the lumbar spine, you can do it in flexion or you can do it in extension. Some people respond better with flexion, and some people to respond better with extension, depending on the type of lesion there is in the spine. And you have to figure that out. And one of the ways to figure that out is by putting them into these positions. And if they're telling you that the pain in the leg is increasing, you don't want to do that. You want to go in the opposite direction.
Of course, of course. And obviously, you know, not being inflamed, it's easier for you guys to work and to treat. I saw that you can also move the table side to side. I think you did that to me that one time that we were in.
Mm-hmm.
How did that feel? How did it feel just now?
I feel like I can dance now.
Awesome.
I was never a great dancer. Now I think I can maybe take a shot at it. But I just want to tell you, I had a patient last night, a longtime patient. He called me and he said he was working out in the gym and he was doing lat pull downs. And he's a little narcissistic. So he turned to the side and looked at himself in the mirror to see how he was performing. And his neck locked up, right?
Wow.
And then that night, it started going down his arm. And he was really, you know, concerned about it. So he called me and asked me if he can come in. And I said, yeah, come in right away, because I don't want it to get too inflamed before, you know, because you get a full-blown radiculopathy. It's really hard to get. You got to live with that for a couple of weeks, you know. So I brought him in. And it's, you know, at this point in our careers, I mean, we've worked about 45 years in chiropractic. I'm not going to tell you who's been working too much longer, but
we'll let you figure that out.
We've got a lot of experience, and a lot of it is intuitive. So he came in, and you know, I palpated, and he was telling me exactly where it was, how it happened. So I knew the mechanism of injury, and I decided to use the. Will you grab that Y strap? There's a Y strap that we use. And
social media, it's very overused, but
yeah. So,
oh, yes, I've seen it. Yeah,
you may remember this. So this is a Velcro, and you put this underneath the occiput of the head.
Okay.
And then you put this around the chin, and it's Velcroed. And basically, it's a way of pulling the cervical, tractioning the cervical spine. But you can do it in a very gentle manner. You just want to have, like, a little tension and give it a slight pull. And then I asked him if it felt comfortable, and he said, yeah, it feels great. So that's an indication that interplay between the patient and the doctor is very important in assessing whether this is going to be an appropriate technique or not, right? Just like the flexion distraction table. Put them in a certain position, they say that hurts, you discontinue it right away. What we do with the strap, I gave it another little tug, and it released the neck, the cervical vertebra, and he immediately felt relief. And he said, oh my God, that was perfect. He gets up and he said, it's completely gone. So we saved him about 2 weeks of agony, because that would have gotten worse and more inflamed. He went home, he iced it down a little bit as I instructed him, and he called me, he said, you're a miracle worker. Now, it's not miracle worker, but you know, you feel good about those kinds of results when you have a patient that's really in a lot of pain and is looking at the possibility of having a few weeks of that kind of pain.
Exactly, and you guys did it at the right time, right? You were talking to the patient and you make sure you brought him in right when it was the good moment. I feel like that's also the touch that you guys have, right, on the timing. Well,
that's kind of one of our mottos is, you know, you mentioned about introducing other types of intervention. It's the appropriate care at the appropriate time.
That's correct.
You know, what is the most appropriate type of care for this patient at the time? And, you know, bringing them in right away now, you know, some doctors be like, oh, I'm busy, I'll see you tomorrow. Come back to the Mars at the office. But no, we want to see them right away to get it under control. Sometimes chiropractic care by itself isn't enough. You know, we hate admitting that at times, but we have to do what's best for the patient. And sometimes that means going seeing the medical doctor, going seeing the orthopedist, go talk to the physical therapist. We need to do more strengthening in this area. And it's this collaborative approach that I think that allows us to best serve patients and really give them what they really need to get them feeling a lot better.
Yes.
And that builds trust between the physician and the chiros as well, because there used to be a lot of mistrust, but I think there's a better understanding of what we do now in the medical community, and they trust us more.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, the conversation with the patient, getting them to understand when the best moments are for them to come in, and, you know, it's just a gaining of trust, obviously, with the patient. But I love those techniques. I've had them myself with Dr. Cotter. I felt great. I actually can dance right after that. I was wearing a strap.
Yeah,
I came in wearing a strap. We were doing some media work for Dr. Cotter, and I just happened to ask. I was like, hey, you know, maybe you could check. And he's just, let's go to the table right away. And I felt so much better afterwards. And it was so fast. I literally felt like I was brand new in a matter of 20 minutes. So, and I've been obviously doing the workouts and all the stretches that he recommended me. And I wanted to bring that in with the stretches, because a lot of people, you know, for sciatica, I see them stretching a lot of like the lower back, the buttocks, the hamstrings a lot. Mm-hmm. What would you recommend maybe on not only lifestyle changes, but also techniques that they can do from home?
That's a good question. Well, I'm just trying to see, where should I start? So if you're somebody who sits a lot, it's going to be important for you to make it a routine to maybe set a timer, maybe set a, you know, a little alarm clock to remind you, hey, get up and move. If you're somebody who stands a lot and is constantly moving, maybe it's a good idea to ice down at the end of the day and do some stretching to help alleviate some of those issues. Ergonomics is very important. How you're set up to do your work. How do you have your desk set up? How do you have your workstation set up? How are you setting things up in your car if your job is to drive, to make sure that you're in the best position to do what you need to do without aggravating or hurting yourself. And if something does happen, ideally what you want to do is ice down if you feel acute pain that happens right away. If it's something that's kind of been going on for a while and you're getting treated, then heat is ideally what we want to do for about 15, 20 minutes, moist heat. It's hard for us to talk about stretches specifically without seeing what the patient's presenting with. Because if I can say, yeah, let's do some knee to chest stretches, you have a disc tear, it's making it worse. You don't want to do that. So anything that's painful, you want to stay away from. If you're exercising, it shouldn't hurt. If you're stretching, it shouldn't hurt. You should feel a nice stretch. Some patients say, no, you really have to feel it. So I really want to go deep. And I'm like, no, because then if you're irritating the muscle, an irritated muscle contracts, the opposite of what we want to do when we stretch. So those kinds of, you know, changes and changing how we're sitting and what we're doing and how we're doing it. So if you're at a computer, maybe go from sitting to standing if you can. Maybe changing the seat that you're sitting on, going from a chair to a body ball, going from a body ball to a kneeling chair. Changing the way that you're positioning your body so that you're less likely to hurt yourself and less likely to put the same kind of micro trauma and strain over and over again. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
No, that's great. I mean, there's a lot. You spend most of your time outside the chiropractor's office. So, correct. You know, you're only coming in maybe once a week, twice a week at most. Three times a week in a very bad situation. So what we do at home and what we do at work is very, very important. And being aware of that is the first part. It's like acknowledgement, right? And so sitting up, doing chin tucks at the desk, you know, is a very important thing. You could do chin tucks in your bed and push back against the pillow. And that action is very, very important in stabilizing the cervical spine, because it's so many of us are like this. But to Gil's point, and actually the ergonomics is the most important thing, but when you come into the office, there are definitely stretches that will help support. And so that teaches the patient, like, oh, these are the muscles that I need to pay attention to, because a lot of them don't make the mind-body connection, the mind-muscle connection. They're like, I don't know why it hurts. And then when you start stretching it and they say, oh yeah, that's the place where it's hurting. So I'm going to put Gil on the table for a moment. We'll do a quick stretch. I'll show you a couple of the stretches if that's
awesome. Yes, that's that works. Absolutely. Let our viewers see the magic being done with Dr. Cotter and Dr. Rodriguez.
You can see, right?
Yes, we can see.
Yeah. All right. So let's say it's the left side. So I'll generally start off, first of all, we'll test to see whether it is a disc that's involved. So we'll do some orthopedic testing. We'll do a straight leg raise. We'll bring the leg up and see if there's radiating pain when I bring it to a certain degree or angle. And then the same thing here, right? And then once we realize that what the situation is and we get him feeling better, if we can do this, we'll start doing some stretching like this. So I'll ask him to push down against me. And he's going to exert a fair amount of force onto my shoulder, and that's activating these muscles, right? And I'm going to give him a stretch. I'll tell him to relax. So it's a, you know, contract and stretch is a very good way of getting the muscle to activate and then and get some blood in the muscle and then stretch it.
Yes.
And push again and relax, and I'll bring him a little higher, and I'll feel the resistance, and he'll feel a little bit of a burn. And then he'll push again, and then we'll stretch him a little further to tolerance. We don't want to go too far. We don't want to not be able to tolerate it, okay? Because then you're not getting much done there. And after I do that, I'll put the foot over the other knee, the opposite knee, and I'll lean in this way and use my body weight, and I'll ask him to push against my chest. And then I'll ask him to relax, and we'll stretch out all those gluteal muscles, the piriformis muscles, all those muscles, push again.
Which feels very nice, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that looks like a good stretch right there.
And so, and I'm using minimal, you know, just body weight, so I'm not killing myself. Push again. And relax. And that's a really good general stretch. And you start getting all those gluteal muscles to open up a little bit, the hip flexor, the hip rotators to really stretch out a little bit.
Yeah.
If they're in a lot of pain, we'll just do, just move your hands a moment. Get them stretching this way and just get the flexors, you know, the erector spinae muscles to stretch out a little bit, right? Push against me and relax. Push, relax, push, and then relax. And then I might put a little more body weight on it to get a good deep stretch in there. And that'll help to open up the spaces and stretch the muscle. And that gives a lot of relief.
That was great demonstration for our listeners to see, you know, exactly what, you know, what some of the treatments and some of the techniques that can be done. I wanted to maybe, you know, enter into just red flags. What are red flags that someone, you know, experiencing sciatic pain should seek medical attention immediately? What are some red flags that maybe at home they can just, you know, run to the doctor or
so if they have bowel or bladder dysfunction, that's an emergency. Yeah. Okay. They should go straight to the hospital.
Right to the ER. Any sudden weakness in the foot, for example, you're dragging your leg, you can't pick it up, you can't move it, that's not good. Any issues with going to the bathroom, immediately to the ER. Any changes in temperature in the leg, you should bring that up with your doctor. Severe cramping that's not related to anything that you're doing. Redness in the leg, anything like that. Those are things that you want to bring up to your medical doctor right away.
That could be indicative of the thrombophlebitis, which is something that we saw recently, a deep tendon thrombosis or something like that. We had a patient.
Deep vein thrombosis, yeah.
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 A friend of mine, he came in and his leg was hurting. He thought it was related to playing softball over the weekend for 8 hours. He comes in and he had really thick legs and thick calves and everything. But the one leg that was symptomatic was discolored. It was like a deep red. It was almost blue. And I'm like, this is weird. And then as he was there, I was stretching him a little bit and you could see the size difference in the two legs. So to me, that indicated there's congestion in the leg. There's a change. I sent him right to the emergency room. He didn't want to go. I said, you have to go. You've got to go. This is a serious condition. And sure enough, they found a thrombus in the upper thigh and they removed it. It was almost dissected. So it was a very serious situation. He could have died from it. So he's been on like a blood thinner for the last couple of months. It takes some time to resolve that, you know, but he did have surgery and now he's fine. But, you know, these are conditions that present to chiropractors and you've got to know what you're dealing with in the body. So we're pretty well trained to recognize different diagnoses and refer out appropriately.
Exactly. And then chiropractic, it's, you know, it's a drug-free and non-invasive approach to pain and management. You know, research suggests also that chiropractic care can be effective for, you know, sciatic pain relief and the demonstrations you guys did. I think it was great to, you know, show our audience. I don't know if you guys have any final thoughts, but I want to thank you for your time, for your demonstrations. Dr. Carter, Dr. Gill, you guys want to add anything maybe to wrap it up?
I think patients are knocking on the door. I think we may have to leave now. But it was great talking to you as always.
I myself, book me.
Thank you, Orlando.
Thank you, Dr. Carter. Thank you, Dr. Rodriguez. Thank you very much. This was it for today. Until next time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, UNIT.
Have a great day.
Bye now.